Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Empower You Radio Network, and thank you for joining us today on Living Astrology, where we are tapping into the magic of the cosmos for practical guidance and wisdom, with your host, Janet Hickox, intuitive astrologer and numerologist.
Welcome to Living Astrology. I'm your host, Janet Hickox, and I am talking to you today live from Washington State on what is getting very close to the winter solstice for us. And so, in fact, we're sitting here just before the solstice with a new moon also on the way. And so I want to take a little bit of time today to talk about the new moon as it's coming up this Sunday. So here we sit in the new moon window. The new moon occurs on December 21st at 0 degrees Capricorn at 5:36 p.m. Pacific time, if you're calling from, or if you're in the Pacific time zone, 8:36 p.m. Eastern, if you're in the Eastern time zone. And essentially, it's going to be a really interesting new moon. Of course, I think all the new moons are interesting. You probably hear me say that every month. But this one is particularly interesting as it is occurring with a stellium of planets in Capricorn. And if you recall from other conversations that we've had, a stellium is just another word for a group of planets that are all sitting in the same sign at the same time. And whenever that happens, whenever we have a stellium of planets like that, either by transit, which is what's happening this coming week or this weekend, and or if you have this in your own chart due to the way things were configured at birth, then it makes that particular part of your chart have a lot of focus or a lot of energy directed at it. And so what we have going on this Sunday then with the new moon is the sun and moon, both at 0 degrees of Capricorn, Mercury at 7 degrees of Capricorn, Pluto at 12 degrees Capricorn, and Venus at 14 degrees Capricorn. So, of course, then that we spent a lot of time last week, remember, talking about the Uranus-Pluto square. And so now what we have are several planets that are feeding into that current Uranus square Pluto. And remember, some of the things that was about radical life changes. And it brought up the issues of the old versus the new, and how could we move forward in the world, taking the best of what there is from the old or the current or the traditional, let's say, and moving forward with new ideas, new concepts, and new ways of thinking and doing things. So this particular new moon, again, is always a time when we set intentions, where we're sort of walking through a gateway, if you will, or a portal into something that we can create that's new. And, or, you know, moving forward some way in our lives. And when we are looking at our own charts and we are aligned with that movement, then we can purposefully walk through our lives, creating by intention the things that we want to have in our lives, using our consciousness instead of doing things from an unconscious standpoint. And while we're talking about doing things conscious and unconscious, today is December 18th, and happy birthday to my youngest daughter, Jennifer, who's celebrating her 28th birthday today. I love you, Jennifer, and I'm not sure she got a chance to listen, but she'll probably get to listen to this later. But today is a banner day in that when we get to this date on the calendar, the sun is in alignment with the galactic center. And that brings us to a point in time where a lot of wonderful cosmic energy filters into the planet. And each of us then, no matter where we have the galactic center in our own chart as far as what house it's in, can be bathed with these new energetic particles that come into the Earth. And by that I mean people can come up with wonderful new ideas, ahas that sort of strike out of nowhere, or you suddenly get direct access to information that you need in order to move forward. So there's a lot of magic in the day today and over the next several days as these planetary alignments sync together. And, you know, as we move forward in time, At some point down the line, the galactic center will precess and eventually come to land at 0 degrees Capricorn. Probably not in our lifetimes, but it will happen, and so that makes this particular degree even more interesting that the new moon is going to be at. All right, today's show is called Awakening the Goddess Through Astrology, and we'll be talking about the goddess asteroids, Juno, Vesta, Pallas Athena, Ceres, and the Black Moon Lilith, and we'll be talking about them with my guest, whom I would like to introduce to you now. Her name, Priestess Bhairavi Balasubramaniam. She's a PhD, a scholar and researcher, goddess worshiper, motivational speaker, intuitive astrologer, and poetess. She sees the movement of spirit in every waking moment, every form, every chapter in this divine dance of life and existence. She runs 3 Facebook pages devoted to the rising consciousness of the divine feminine and writes extensively on her blog. As a priestess with a PhD, Bhairavi weaves her intuitive knowledge through gnosis, along with her academic commitment to in-depth research and analytical rigor together. Seeing spirituality as not just something you do for a few minutes a day, or not just what is written in texts, she explores the intersections between the spiritual, social, political, ritual, cultural, and transcendental. Some of her topics of interest are breaking of spiritual stereotypes, the difference between the text and embodiment of spiritual understanding, the notion of cultural appropriation, and the challenges of cross-cultural interpretation of spiritual insights, and, of course, living, speaking, writing, and embodying the path of the dark goddess. Please join me in welcoming Bhairavi Subramaniam. Balasubramaniam. I'm so sorry, Bhairavi. Are you there? I knew I was going to mess up something in your name. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
That's fine. Bhairavi will do.
Thank you. Well, what an extraordinary week this is going to be for you. I hear congratulations are in order for being published in an academic book titled Democracy in Practice. And happy upcoming 28th birthday to you.
Thank you so much.
You didn't know I would know that, did you? I actually saw the post on Facebook just before we went on the air about you being published in the Democracy in Practice book. And it's an academic book, obviously. So, you know, it's not something that a lot of people might read, but I think that's very prestigious being published in a book like that. So congratulations. And you know what, maybe you can start by telling us a little bit more about yourself, Bhairavi, and how did you get interested in astrology, and in particular, how did you get interested in the goddess asteroids in astrology? I think we dropped her. Oh, she did. She's not on the line. So when Bhairavi comes back, Steve, just put her straight through, and we'll talk to her a little bit about herself. She is certainly a very accomplished young woman at age 28. I believe, and when I was first talking to her, she told me she had graduated college very young, and having a PhD means that she has gone through many years of college and is very knowledgeable. And her work is varied. I'm really surprised at the kind of the wide range of subjects that Bhairavi is interested in and is very knowledgeable about and speaks to. Looking at her website today, she was talking about the galactic center and how today the Earth or the Sun is aligned with the galactic center. And, of course, then she is also very much interested in dealing with astrology of some of these asteroids that a lot of astrologers are beginning to use more and more, particularly because the Astronomical Society, back a couple of years ago, you might remember that they took and demoted the planet Pluto, and that meant that some of these asteroids got promoted. They demoted Pluto to a dwarf planet and promoted planets like Ceres to dwarf planets. Bhairavi, are you back with me?
Yes, I'm back right now.
Oh, thank you so much for coming back. I'm sorry that you're having issues with your internet keeping you here. So what I had asked you before you got dropped off is to tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get to be interested in the goddess energy and in particular the astrology of these asteroids?
Well, my relationship with the goddess is a story which honestly started several lifetimes ago, as that is usually the case with anyone in the business of spiritual facilitation. In this life, it was a pretty obvious correlation. My mother ended up naming me Bhairavi, which is the Mahavidya form of the goddess Kali. She's known as the most terrifying form of Kali. Not that much is really terrifying about me, except anyone who comes up with a pile of BS and I have to cut it down. But basically, I'm living up to my namesake. And my parents noticed that I was able to see things and perceive things which they couldn't when I was very, very young. And so my mother realized that I needed a deeper connection with something beyond myself. And so she introduced Goddess Durga, because we are Tamils. That's a ethnic group of Southern Indians. It was natural for me to go to an Indian, or rather a Hindu goddess. And from then I discovered Kali. And then from then, when I went to the UK to do my PhD, I met my mentor, spiritual teacher Carolyn Douglas Tosh in Coventry. And there she really helped me expand my sense of what it meant to connect with the divine feminine. So my roots were in Hinduism, specifically a very Dravidic or Tamilian understanding of Hinduism. And then I kind of expanded from then on. Astrology, in all fairness and honesty, is something which I literally just woke up one day and started doing. No one could really understand why or how I understood it as fast as I did. And I just seemed to be getting information which, without a teacher, without a tutor, it just seemed to make sense. And, so it's just probably something I did a while ago.
You were born to this, in other words.
Pretty much.
Which is, you know, that's always kind of, you know, the interesting story behind a lot of people on the spiritual path, is that, you know, there's a sort of magical thing that occurs that kind of draws people into their destiny or brings them into contact with the information that they have uniquely brought with them to share with everybody. And I see that, you know, you're no exception to that.
Thank you. It is kind of overwhelming sometimes, and it feels like I basically need to grow into my own shoes for epic stuff I did a long time ago that I can't quite remember now.
Yep, exactly. And I just want to let our listeners know that today we are talking to Priestess Bhairavi Balasubramaniam. She's a PhD scholar, researcher, and goddess. I'm going to call her the goddess herself, and she's going to be talking with us today about the divine feminine. She is joining us from, I think it's Malaysia that you're in, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yes, so for some of you who are listening, you may notice that there is a little bit of a lag time between me talking and her talking, and that is as it's going to be just because of the difference in where we are, and she's using Skype to call in. So it's not that she isn't hearing the question, it's just the delay before we hear her voice. So today we're going to be talking about, and I am so fascinated in the subject, Bhairavi, because there's so many goddesses, and I noticed today on your web or your blog that you were working with other things that I'd never even heard of, Chariklo, the Terpsichord or something, all these things I'd never heard of. And, of course, that fascinates me. But let's just kind of stick with the goddesses right now. And, you know, why don't you just one by one tell us about each of the goddesses, starting with Juno.
Okay. Well, just for a little bit of background, we didn't really start using what we call these goddess asteroids till not too long ago in the study and interpretation of astrology. In fact, quite a few people don't yet know about them. So these are the ones which more and more astrologers are beginning to integrate into the understanding of the craft. And then there's a whole bunch of asteroids, trans-Neptunian objects, God knows what else out there. There's hundreds, if not thousands of them, probably thousands, which also deal with different archetypes and aspects of the goddess and the divine masculine. What we're going to focus on today is the kind of the handful of asteroids more and more people are slowly becoming aware of, and this is the one that's going to enter mainstream astrological consciousness, so to speak, before we even get to the other stuff. So it's kind of like your gateway to understanding the rest of them. So we're going to start with an understanding of what just these basic asteroids are, what they mean, what they represent in the birth chart, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to start with Ceres. Well, Ceres in mythology refers to, and all of this can be linked back to mythological equivalents, usually in the Greco-Roman tradition. So if we understand the mythology behind them, we understand more or less the essence of what they bring to our understanding of astrology. Now, Ceres refers to the goddess Demeter. And long story short, she is the one who brings in the cycle of seasons into the world. When she is joyful, there is spring, there is summer. And when she's upset and depressed, there is fall and there is winter. Now, the reason why these cycles occur is because her daughter, whom we know as Persephone, she basically gets abducted and forced upon by Hades, the god of the underworld, and later becomes the queen of the underworld. Because Ceres gets so depressed and nothing manages to grow on Earth, it becomes a perpetual winter, a deal is struck and Persephone is allowed to stay with her mother for 6 months of the year, hence the cycle. So Ceres really shows us, taking a step back from that little mythological exposition, Ceres really shows us how we best receive nurture and how we best give nurture. Also, what can happen when we do not receive the nurture that we require. So if you're, for example, trying to see your relationship with a caregiver, a parent, especially in your early childhood, or even your understanding of who you are as a parent, if you're planning to have children or adopt children, Ceres is a very useful asteroid to look at, because she will give you a sense of what is the style of caregiving or nurturing that you are best able to give and receive at the same time.
Okay, that makes
like
perfect
keep going,
sense.
Or do you want me to expand on that a bit further?
Sure.
Okay, good.
You can.
The next one
is Talos Athena.
Okay, I think I'll keep going with the list, and then we can revisit what we need to revisit. So I'll just kind of give you like nuggets, and if there's anything that needs to be teased out, just let me know. Now, Pallas Athena refers to whom we understand more commonly as the goddess Athena. And she's always been one of my favorite goddesses. I've just been like insanely drawn to her ever since I was a little kid. And she is someone who represents the qualities of the general, the healer, and the compassionate mother, but not in the stereotypical sense of compassion. She is a mother, but she is a virgin mother. She does not actually, at least in mythology, she does not lay with any men. There is some suspicion about her and women, but that's never really expanded upon. And she basically is a surrogate mother to another figure within the same mythological circuit. Now, she is the type of mother who makes sure that you get what you require. She's not overly sentimental. She is not gushy. She is not huggy or cuddly. She basically makes sure that what you require is done. Now, she exhibits that form of nurturing. That's one side of her. But what we normally associate with the Athena is whether we go into war, we stand our ground, or we make a dignified retreat. She is ultimately the strategic one. With Pallas, where Pallas Athena is in your chart, you will know which aspect of area of your life you can actually make the strongest convictions with. And that's a very, very important thing for us, especially when we talk about the rising of the feminine, having that conviction to actually know when to stand your ground, when to walk away, and when to rush headlong into battle is really, really important. She also tells us about healing. See, Pallas Athena in mythology is credited as being the inventor of the olive tree. And the olive was known to the Greeks is a very, very medicinal plant. Bitter, but medicinal. And so even there, she's shown as a form of a healer using that same quality of intellect, using then the innovation that can come from the intellect. She's also associated with a bunch of other things as well, defense, weaving, God knows what else. But the basic idea is this really powerful female figure that says, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to do it. So we move to Juno. And Juno is the third one on my list here. And I have a slightly different interpretation of Juno that I see written down. And I sort of sat with it and thought about it. In more traditional understandings, Juno is shown as the energy of the soulmate. And she's very often known as the goddess Astoreth of marriage. And I think about that, and it just seems somewhat incomplete for me. So what I did was I looked back at the history of who Juno was, how she was invoked, so to speak, did my own little digging, and I came to a slightly different interpretation, one that actually works really well when I look at her in a chart. I see Juno as, yes, the energy of the soulmate, but more so the energy of finding soul completion. And I feel that much of astrology has been rewritten from whatever it used to be to sort of privilege or favor a male subject in mind. So if the subject is male, the person who, assuming heterosexuality, is going to be his soulmate is naturally going to be a woman. If your subject is a divine male, so soulmate energy is going to be the divine female. And I feel as though that got mistranslated over the ages, because Juno deals with pretty much everything. She is a goddess of defense. She is a goddess of birthing. They invoke her anytime there is a liminal shift in status, whether it's from, you know, the shift between being a woman to being a mother, whether it's the shift from seasons or different cycles of time. She's invoked in pretty much everything. And so what it seems to me is that this energy, when we look at her for what she is, talks about the ways that specifically the divine feminine comes into our life in order that we may complete our soul's experience of different forms of divinity. And so when we actually expand that understanding to include the divine feminine, the way Juno looks like in the chart actually changes dramatically. I mean, I have seen Juno in charts show up where, due to soulmate and karmic contracts, people may have experienced, for example, even violent abuse from someone else. And yet that person actually shows up in the chart as Juno, triggering a whole cycle down which a person goes through different initiations, different processes to dealing and working with goddess energy. And let's face it, at the heart of it, goddess energy is not, it's not always cuddly and nurturing and comforting. They are aspects of the goddess that teach you lessons specifically through the modalities of loss, strife, and struggle. And so it can really go either way. It's not an energy which I would always say is about love and marriage and commitment. Uh-huh. It can go that way, but it can go many other ways just because there are that many facets of the divine feminine. So she's really a wide open type of energy, but she's one that draws in experiences, people, et cetera, for us to actually get back in touch with her, with a capital H. So then I move to Vesta, and Vesta is arguably my favorite goddess asteroid. She represents the archetype of the priestess or the spiritual facilitator. She is connected with the history of the Vestal Virgin, who again came from a Greco-Roman context. Now, Vestal Virgins were basically women who lived with a law unto themselves. They were not answerable to the administration of time. They were not subjects involved or governed under the rule of patriarchy. Vestal virgins had control over their bodies and they had control over their sexualities. The original meaning of the word virgin, which we also need to see when we reinterpret the meaning of Virgo, is not a woman who is frigid and it's not a woman who is celibate. The original meaning of the virgin is actually a woman who had independent control over her body, over her sexuality, over herself. And so you can see why, especially in somewhat ancient times, this would have been a radical position to occupy, a radical sense of what it meant to have female agency. So that is the original meaning of the virgin. Now, this isn't to say that every priestess needs to be sexual, et cetera, et cetera. That is a matter of choice. But it means to say that there is that choice that a woman particularly can make over what she considers her spiritual path and her spiritual service. The Vestal Virgins were women who tended to the sacred flame. They literally kept a flame burning constantly in their temple. But that also referred to a much more metaphysical understanding of tending to the sacred flame, and that related with the energy of Kundalini that we see in the body. That relates to all kinds of things to do with sacred sex, which I'm not going to get into here. But basically, these were alchemists of the body. They were not just women sitting in a temple and chanting. I mean, on the surface, that may have looked as such, but they were people doing much more interesting things and looking at the mysteries of life, death, and rebirth. You know, in terms of energies, Vesta really combines the archetype of both Scorpio and Virgo. There is this constant energy of service, but at the same time, Vesta is actually called to sacrifice that which she is truly focused on, that which she truly desires, for it to be purified, regenerated, and transformed into a whole new thing. So there is this constant element of service, constant element of sacrifice, constant element of cyclic understandings of birth, death, and rebirth. And so she's a very, very interesting energy. When we see her in a chart, what she tells us is about where a person is, one, unusually focused, and how that particular focus, as long as it doesn't turn into an all-out obsession, Scorpionic energies can work that way. That is a place where she is constantly called to sacrifice that which she desires in order to, in order to actually find a much more refined understanding of what he or she was focused on in the first place. Some associate Vesta as the goddess of the hearth, and yes, indeed, that was her function and her role. And for some, it can manifest as a fixation upon the home, but I feel that home is a fairly narrow definition. It is, and I believe it connects with the larger understanding of fourth house energy that links more with a sense of community, ancestry, and a larger sense of the collective beyond the immediate family circle. So that pretty much covers what we call the goddess Asteroids. And with Janet's permission, I also decided to talk about Black Moon Lilith, who is not an asteroid. She is a particular point derived of mathematical calculation. And I believe you had Laura Walker on a few weeks ago, who talked more about this in absolute depth, and which I enjoyed. I love that show. Yeah. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about Black Moon Lilith and what she also represents. Now, the reason why I include her in this discussion of goddesses is that it is simply not complete without her. There are many on the goddess path and on the god path and on any spiritual path which assume for some reason that gods and goddesses who are described as dark are somehow negative or evil or to be avoided. Nothing could be farther from the truth. In this universe, in this reality, the only thing that really, there are two things, two principles which make a sort of sense no matter where you are, and one is change and the other one is balance. And basically, we are constantly called to balance the different aspects of polarities of spiritual energy in all that we do. We cannot erase the darkness because it's uncomfortable. We cannot exist in light just because we feel it's safe. There needs to be a duality of both. And in fact, it goes well beyond the concept of duality, but then I'm going somewhere else. Now, I include Black Moon Lilith in this because she gives a flavor and sense of the type of assertive, suppressed feminine energy that really breaks through the shackles of patriarchal conditioning and thousands of years of basically having been stomped upon. And this is an energy that is much more intense in a certain way and also much more relevant in other ways to this rising energy of the feminine that we have right now, as we have so many shackles to break through. And when I say the feminine, I'm not just talking about women. I'm talking about that aspect of the divine feminine that exists in both men and women and anyone of any gender identity. So when we see the role of Black Moon Lilith, when we see Black Moon Lilith in the chart, I interpret that as the point from which, or rather the trigger point, where a person actually brings out the elements of what is known as the Dark Goddess or Dark Mother archetype. here is where you really get your Kali on. Here is where Persephone comes in. Here is where Vajrayogini, Pele, Hecate, Menyadak, goddess of choice, comes in. This is really where, when you see that injustice that is perpetuated against the feminine, you basically rise to say, no, this will not do. I will no longer tolerate this. Lilith is a much maligned figure in mythology. She was, there are different origin stories for her. Some place her as the handmaiden of goddess Inanna. Others see her origin as being within the within sacred Jewish texts. Long story short, in the Abrahamic understanding of the world, she was the first woman before Eve who basically refused to listen to Adam. And so she could not be controlled. So she basically took off. And then she was demonized as an eater of children and as a night terror and God knows what else. It's a very common thing we see in the mythologies of the world, where a woman who refuses to submit to the will of a man is immediately demonized or vilified and very often shown to be the actual opposite of what a stereotypical woman should be, a baby eater, which is fairly harsh, so to speak.
I would say that's pretty harsh.
That's pretty harsh, and it happens in mythologies all over the world. It's one of, like, patriarchy's biggest tools against the rising feminine. You're like, oh, you're going to contest me? Right, we're going to make you so demonic that no one is even going to come near you or think of you. And that's pretty much what they did with Lilith. And so when I read interpretations of Black Moon Lilith, part of me just wants to sigh, because it's all about how the evil, negative, dark aspects of the feminine come out and are manipulative and God knows what else. And I really feel that this is something which we need to reinterpret. I have Black Moon Lilith on my ascendant in the sign of Cancer. As far as I know, I am a fairly compassionate person and I have not eaten any children. So, you know, it's
Thankfully.
And, you know, it makes sense in my life because of that immediate association I have with the name of the goddess. And apparently I look like her as well. So says my father. If I get pissed off with him about anything, my eyes just go wide and he just kind of goes, oh dear.
But so it sounds like to me, Bhairavi, that these goddesses tell a story in a chart.
Yeah, absolutely. And they tell us the story about different aspects of our relationship with the divine feminine. And, these are basically different goddesses who deal with different issues. They deal with different aspects of our awakening. And so if we actually try and look at what level, what form, what purpose we came to fulfill in this lifetime through a particular awakening process, we look at these goddesses to see how this expansion and exploration of divine feminine energy plays a role in our own soul awakening. So really, this is a very important part of the human puzzle, not just a puzzle for women, but a puzzle for everyone, as there is a goddess within all men, just as there is a god within all women.
Uh-huh.
So shall we move on to, practical examples or do you have further questions? How should we do this?
Well, I think what I would like to do, if we can, is I have given you two people's birth dates so far, one a male and another a female, and I thought it would be kind of interesting if we walked through their charts with this information and see how it plays out differently between the masculine and the feminine. And
That sounds good. I have to say that one of my clients, in fact, he was the second man I read for, and he had the strongest Vesta I had ever seen. He had the strongest priestess archetype I'd ever seen. So I looked at him and I just kind of went, "You're a priestess," and he just went, "Cool."
And let's talk about that for a second, because I mean, how do the men that you work with react when you tell them something like that? I mean, do they understand what you mean with that? Are they okay with that? Does it assault their masculinity?
Well, interestingly, I had very few men come to me. And in fact, today, I don't mind telling you, I quickly glanced at my inbox on Facebook and I had a man who was very upset that I had used astrology and explained his partner, friend, girlfriend's life. And he asked me, you know, I'm not trying to attack you, but is it a trick? Is it a manipulation? How do you know these things? So that's one emphasis. I was just like, I'm good at my job, you know. What do you want me to say? So that's one response of the masculine to A, outright reject anything that does not seem rational or logical. I mean, the reason why I put a PhD in my name is because A, I'm a political scientist, and B, I'm kind of like putting it out there that, well, someone who has these, you know, very patriarchally encoded values of what is success and what is intelligence can kind of look at astrology and go, there is merit in this. And that's one of the reasons why I have that title as part of my own. But I find that men will either reject this. There is a credibility factor, and that's definitely one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is to say, and this is something which is often leveled against spiritualists, that they are not intelligent or they are not critical thinkers, or that's just not the case. I am a very critical thinker, and astrology really kicks ass. So, you know, that's, it's one of the main responses that men have, which is probably why a lot of men don't end up coming my way. The ones who do, and I think it's an energetic selection process, because I would probably kind of show them exactly what they did not wish to hear. And so it's kind of a self-selective process, kind of just kind of know, okay, I'm not going here. And, you know, there are some skeptics, which is fine. That's everyone's reality, and they're entitled to believe what they believe. But I find that the men who do come to me are ones who are already very much in tune with the feminine. And they either know me through my writings or my videos, and they kind of get that this is where that rising needs to happen. So, you know, it is actually very interesting for me as an astrologer when I speak to a guy, because I have to translate. There are words and phrases which a woman would get, you know, and whereas for a man, it's almost like we don't have that slang, we don't have that lingo. So my brain kind of has to turn into the academic for a little while and goes, oh, how do I explain this? But generally, it seems to be all right. And the men who come to me for readings are already very much in tune with this energy. And they are willing, they have a certain humility about them that allows them, A, to see that, yes, they have been the benefits of a particular patriarchal system, and B, they are no longer willing to participate in the kind of ideological or even other forms of benefits that can come from that system. So, you know, I see it as a blessing. It means less customers, but that's perfectly fine. It just means that these souls are the most ready to work with this understanding. But it's not an energy that a lot of men will be able to work with, because it will force them to challenge their role in creating this particular paradigm of reality. No offense to the guys. They've just had to, they've just been forced to have been entrenched in this way of thinking for a very long time. I mean, I've seen, and as an Asian woman, as a Tamil woman, as a young woman, well, fairly young, my mom started to call me an old maid because I'm not married yet.
Oh, my God.
Seriously. I said, I'm going to be 28, and she calls me an old maid. Good God.
Only moms can get away with that.
But, I mean, I've seen this happen so many times, whether it's in academia, whether it's in astrology, whether it's anywhere else. It is one thing for a man to say something and all the guys in the room kind of nod. And if a woman says the same thing, no matter how she says it, there is this additional layer of scrutiny and hostility that often comes. But coming back to the chart, you know, explaining this to a guy who is open and willing and ready to experience it is easy peasy, you know, because they've already got that mental state of readiness. But to someone who's very much in denial, it's going to be like dragging them through hot coals, because it's going to be like, well, actually, you have a vulnerability in this area, or you may decide to give care in this area, or perhaps it's in this area. That, I mean, the most relatable one for men would be Pallas Athena, because she was basically a very ancient goddess who was kind of taken and subverted by the patriarchy of the time in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, you know. She had her own origins in the serpent and bird goddesses of a much older age, but then they suddenly made her jump out of the forehead of Zeus and kind of made them play for their team. So the one that men would relate to the most would be Pallas Athena, but everything else would be terrifying for someone who isn't open and willing and wanting to experience a whole new dimension of themselves, let alone their spiritual paradise.
Yeah, I could see men having issues with Vesta.
Yes.
Particularly if Vesta was in a feminine sign, say a Virgo or something like the Taurus. They might have some issues with that.
Yes.
So, but I think, you know, what I see in this is that there are a lot of strengths in these goddess asteroids that women have even subverted, that have been sort of squelched in us or pushed down, obviously through the patriarchy initially, and that we just have not reclaimed. And that, I think, is the process we're undergoing now, is the reclaiming of these virtues and these strengths and these hidden pieces of ourselves. Would you agree?
I would completely agree, and I'd say it's a very beautiful way of putting that, so thank you. I would say that, yes, we're reclaiming, that's one part of it. I would say another way of expressing that same process with a slightly different energy is that we are remembering it.
Ah, good one.
It is as though we have been, dismembered, and we are quite literally remembering ourselves in those ways. I mean, if you think about Ceres gives us an entire spectrum of caregiving, of nurturing, you know, whereas women have been confined to just one idea. What I find liberating in astrology, especially for the rising feminine today, is that it shows us, at the very least, I mean, it becomes much more complex if you add the layer of sign and house position, but it shows us a whole different number of permutations for ways that the feminine can be expressed. You know, there isn't just one way to be a mother. There isn't just one way to be a nurturer. There isn't just one right way that every woman should subscribe to. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts that astrology as a whole and these goddesses
give. Well, there isn't just one way to be a woman, which was, you know, for so long, sort of pigeonholed women into this role of either mother and wife. I mean, those were the only real acceptable roles that we had, you know, for so long. In history, not in our own lifetimes, perhaps, but, you know, in some respects, yes, it still goes on in this world that women are sort of put into this position of, you know, two choices. And
I would say that it's something that the majority of women in the world still experience. I mean, the United States and the Western countries are a bit ahead in this, but, you know, even then you still got the gender pay gap and so on and so forth. For some context, my research was on the Indian Parliament, and one of the bills I studied was a bill passing reservation for seats for women. And so, you know, I've seen to some extent the practices in China, and to some extent the practices in India, more so India. And I can tell you that it's a whole different level of pigeonholing there. And you consider
no doubt.
It by population. It's a huge, huge percentage of women who are still being forced to conform a certain way. There they've got mother, they have got defender of the nation, they have got goddess and wife. That's about it. So a woman is allowed to be a goddess as long as she defends the nation, and then she quickly becomes a mother again once she's finished her job, which is a whole other problematic thing. But
and as long as she does it the way the male patriarchy decides that she can do it.
Pretty much. That's what they did during the independence movement, the freedom struggle. That's exactly what they did in India. They kind of promised women all these rights. They came out, you know, marched en masse. They were called to be the Durgas and Kalis of the world. And once everything finished, it just kind of got pushed back inside. So it's not just different definitions of being a woman, but even different definitions of what being a goddess is. And I think that really forces us to break out of the kinds of stereotypes that we have about femininity, about divinity, about anything ending in an itty, I-T-Y. So it's very, very liberating in that sense.
So let's take a look. I think I sent you some birth information of two people. Let's start with,
let's start with
the masculine in this case.
Yes, I have a question. The format, you've given it to me as 11:04, is that day first or month first?
That's month first. So month, day, year. I forgot you'd be doing it
month.
More of the European way.
Yes, the rest of the world.
It's It's funny because I have an astrology program that I use for human design, and it pretty much got me used to doing things in the European way, so day, month, year. And then when I do Western astrology, my program wants it the other way, you know, month, day, year. So I use them kind of intermittently right now, or, you know, kind of intermingle the two. I should have known that you'd probably want it the other direction.
That's fine. I had it for April 11th, so I thought I would ask. Have you also drawn up the chart as well?
I have the chart as well, yes.
Is it just so...
I'm going to bring the caller in. Steve, are you there?
Just before you do that, let me just check with you to see if everything's in order. 21 Leo Ascendant, sign at 12 Scorpio.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, hi, Steve. I believe that is correct. Let me move my screen over so I can get that chart up. But yes, that's correct.
Okay, that's great. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, well, thanks for...
What a fascinating
talk. Thank you so much. I'm really blessed that Janet had me on today. I hope I haven't...
You know how that came about? One of my listeners said, oh, you need to have this woman on your show. That caused me to go track you down. I love my listeners. They let me know all kinds of interesting things.
I actually offered her a free complimentary mini read. She asked me to transfer it to a friend, which I did. So, you know, just as a thank you.
Nice.
So, okay, let's start it with Steve's chart. And Steve, have you had your chart done before?
Long time ago.
Okay. All right. So what I have here right now is, because my software is ridiculously manual and I have to go in and, you know, put in all the coordinates and stuff myself, which can make it very, very precise, but it's also fiddly. So before I start reading, I usually check three times, but we don't have time for that today. What I have for you here is the sun is at 12 degrees Scorpio and your first house, your ascendant, is at 21 degrees Leo. That's what I have for you. If you have a different thingamabob, let me know.
That's correct.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on the goddess asteroids that we have been discussing so far. And first, I think I would like to start with your Vesta, as I feel it's in a very, very interesting position. Now, Vesta, as we were talking about before, is really that archetype of the spiritual facilitator. I often say it's the archetype of the priestess. And it's really that energy where, A, you have almost an unnatural fixation upon, you are devoted to that particular part or position in your life. And it's that same position where you find an almost absolute sense of focus, which you are constantly, paradoxically asked to sacrifice or give up over and over again. So it is a very continuing point of evolution that you have there. It's often the position where you may seem like you have to give in to another person, but by doing so, you are actually given many more blessings, many deeper facilitations to a spiritual understanding that makes you go within yourself. It also, especially when Vesta is in a prominent position, it also indicates a connection with previous lifetimes of service. And as far as I can tell, I do see that your Vesta is part of a grand trine, which is awesome, a grand fire trine, as a matter of fact. So we'll see how your Vesta exists within that alignment. Now, for you, Vesta is in the 8th house, from what I can see of your chart. It's in the tail end of the 8th house, heading into the 9th house in the sign of Aries. Now, you're like me in the sense that you have Vesta and Aries. Vesta and Aries, I have found for myself, so this one's actually a bit of an easy one for me, is an energy which is constantly focused on knowing the self, but at the same time, the very idea of who you are you've had to give it up over and over again in different parts of your life. And each time you find a new answer. And that answer just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's very, that idea of going deep is emphasized further because of its 8th house placement. You know, this is where the sense of self becomes challenged, particularly in the realms to do with the intimate, the sexual, the deeply, deeply spiritual, in the sense of going, the understanding of deep or depth going into your own subconscious mind, This is where ancestral and karmic issues really lurk at the bottom of your subconscious, and where Vesta quite literally asks you to light the flame of awareness in that part of your life, in that part of your chart. It is something that is often, it is very mysterious, and so it might not be visible to others, the sacrifices, the services that you are making. Perhaps you may need to actually give in to people whom you work with at an intimate level. Intimacy can refer to sexuality. It can also refer to any situation where you merge your energies with another person. That also includes even things in business, like mergers, so on and so forth. In a stereotypical sense, Vesta is not a quote-unquote strong position. She gives you a strength, but through trial. She gives you strength, but through challenges. So this is an energy, particularly if you were to, if you're seeking to go into business, or if you're having an intimate connection with someone where you, both your energies come together, it is an energy where you need to be aware of the type of service path that you have chosen to manifest in those dealings. That is not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of strength for one who, it is literally an invitation for you to learn to turn the other cheek, just because your cheek is going to heal and it's going to be stronger than ever before. So it's that kind of energy. Does that make sense to you so far?
Absolutely. And I have been told that I've had many lifetimes where I've come in to be of service to other people.
Wonderful. And it, that is embodied as who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got this energy in, I mean, I'm looking at this alignment just to help you understand how all of this fits in. You've got this with a fourth house Saturn in Sagittarius, also connected to a 12th house Uranus in Leo. The way I see it, Saturn is a friend. I wanted to have a teddy bear known as Mr. Saturn, but I am a strange person. But it is basically a teacher. It is a type of, whilst the other teachers are going to be patting you on the back and saying, you know, go forward. If you get something right, you're going to get a gold star. Saturn basically limits everything and says, okay, now you have minimal resources. This is like the Survivor episode of spiritual training. It's that type of energy. But you can.
That's really interesting, because I've always thought that this lifetime is constantly filled with a sense of spiritual training.
Yes,
from
absolutely.
All sorts
and that's
of avenues.
That's honestly where your base, your foundation is, because that's sitting in your fourth house. I mean, whilst your fourth house cusp is in Scorpio, this part of Saturn, and I noticed that you've actually got a North Node Sun conjunction on the fourth house. Good God, man. I can see why. Now, this energy of Saturn here is really, it is constricting. It's a very, and like myself, you have Saturn in Sagittarius, in fact, very close to my natal Saturn, which is interesting considering we're born decades apart. So, ooh, lucky me. It is definitely an energy which, in some sense, it restricts that, you know, that natural access to guidance that you may have, but only to push you further. You know, for some people, if they have too much, they can become complacent about it. And Saturn, and no matter how strong they are, no matter how powerful they are, and Saturn basically says, nope, get off your butt, start working, keep going. It gives you rewards in, you know, in direct proportion to how much you push yourself past the obstacles it creates. And so that definitely does indicate quite a bit of challenge that comes from the mother side of the family, the maternal line in particular, as Saturn is in the fourth house. It does indicate quite a bit of karmic service that is called upon you to actually do at that time. In this particular part of your life, you may have already looked at it before, but it is very, very possible that you got this archetype of service, that you got this dedicated sort of training type approach to spirituality, and we look at Uranus and what that means again. It's very much connected to that maternal lineage. So, yay. So Saturn in Sagittarius, it's going to be very interesting for you when you have your when Saturn comes around and you have your return soon. That is really going to light up the way you look and work with this energy. So I'm very excited for you. If you look at the third corner of this, we see Uranus completing this grand fire trine. Uranus being the great revealer, the great awakener. It is really that energy of what opens you to what we call higher mind or higher consciousness. really it's that energy of source that we perceive to be out there as opposed to inside. And that is more to do with the gnosis process. So for you, Uranus is in the 12th house, which again to me strongly suggests a role as a communicator of spiritual truths and information, a disseminator of spiritual information is something that you have done before. In fact, as this energy is in Leo, you might have, you know, gained some kind of esteem as one who was able to do this at an early age in childhood, whether this lifetime or a previous lifetime isn't clear unless I look at your chart in a great amount of detail. And really, mm-hmm. there is this constant focus of awakening that comes through a very, very veiled inner child archetype, because it's in the 12th house and it's in Leo. And really, this it's almost as though, you know, considering all of the other cool stuff going on in your chart, it's like that inner child part of you is hidden, it's veiled, it's somewhat detached from the other parts of you. And thankfully, you have this grand trine bringing it out and making you connect it with so many, many other powerful houses in your chart. And really, you as a spiritual facilitator are called to bring in the authority, the teacher energy that you can find in your fourth house. And also that energy of almost that young genius or that young eccentric or that innovator that sits in your 12th house. So it's a very, very powerful positioning. And, you know, like I said to my other male client, I would say he's a friend, yeah, you're a priestess, dude.
I get it, yeah.
So if we look at, and this is a very important thing for you because this actually forms what's known as a kite formation, as Uranus opposes your natal Chiron, and that creates a very powerful point of focus in your chart. I won't go too much into that just because I want to get to the other goddess asteroid. So this is definitely something which you will constantly be focused on, as that's in your sixth house. Again, the archetype of Virgo, spiritual facilitator, priestess, and in the sign of Aquarius. It has all to do with your awakening. So it's really a nice balance of masculine and feminine that you've got going on there, which is great. So if you look at the other aspects of the chart, other goddess asteroids, what I instantly see is that you have a near yod. It's almost a yod, but not quite. I would say it probably still functions as a yod. You've got this energy between your Juno, which is just at the cusp of your 11th house, not quite there yet in Gemini, and the moon in Aries, and that kind of points down to this very powerful stellium with your north node, your nadir, your sun, and Mercury. It's a very, very powerful yod. And in fact, it is a yod of complete spiritual service. What this indicates is, with Juno and Gemini, you draw in different spiritual experiences, you draw in, you know, people, you draw in energies, which allow you to find a sense of spiritual completion and wholeness, particularly in the aspects to do with the divine feminine. So in Gemini, it refers to people from your early childhood environment. It also refers to your siblings. Do you have a sister at all or a very significant childhood friend?
No, neither.
Neither. There's definitely something there because this energy is very strongly, it's very strongly squared your Lilith as well. So it is definitely something that has come in at some point. Another option would be if this referred to a soul brother or soul sister, someone who may not be biologically related, but you consider in similar regard and similar esteem.
I definitely have a soul sister. Oh, yes. Yeah, I do.
Okay. That's probably it then. It is an energy that also stimulates the awakening of your mind, your voice, your ability to communicate who you are and the divine femininity within you, where Juno is at this time. For you, this is in the 10th house, and I see the 10th house as something much larger than your career. It is really the legacy that you leave behind in the world. It cuts to 11th, but still in 10th. And really the teachings that this person gives you, that you receive and you share with her, are ones that will actually give you the tools that you need to secure this legacy. And it is definitely one that involves communication whether it's writing, speaking, or simply being able to express in yourself this energy of femininity. In fact, Juno is the only body within your 10th house. So it's something that is inescapably there. Now, as far as... Sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to ask a question. I have, since the 80s been, or late 80s through the 90s, and currently have actively been working on raising my Kundalini, and I've had some really extraordinary Kundalini experiences.
Not surprised. I'm really not surprised. Was this soul sister involved in this development at all?
I'm sorry?
Was this person you referred to as a soul sister, was she facilitating this development in some way, or was it through other means?
Oh, through working with my chakra centers. It was all meditative work I did on my own, and in conjunction with my higher self.
Well, if we want to look at Kundalini, we need to look at Vesta, because she's really the one who activates that and brings that into full being. So I'm really not surprised that you could actually do that by yourself, working on yourself the way you did, just because really you've got that anchoring from a very, very long time ago. Let me just have a quick look at the chart. There is some overlap in this with that energy and this yod that I'm talking about, but I feel that the direction of your question is more towards the Grand Fire Trine that I first talked to you about, especially as the Kundalini is quite literally the column of fire that spreads through your body. And it is a very, very serpentine energy associated with the eighth house anyway. So that's basically where that comes from. If you would like, I can see if there are any major transits or anything like that, if you prefer.
Sure.
Okay, let me just have a quick look to see. Okay, well, here we go. Uranus has pretty much been dancing around your moon and Vesta over the past 2 years, so I'm really not surprised you've had this. Uranus is another very, very powerful energy that has been, that does activate the more electric qualities of the Kundalini as it rises. So it's really a very multi-element type of experience. So that when the awareness actually awakens, that too awakens. And, you know, it's, like I said, in the past few years, it has quite literally been dancing around your Vesta. So really, absolutely no surprise that, that you've been having those experiences as well. And they've probably been more intense as of late, or in all likelihood.
It's been ramping. I just wanted to interject here that it's been ramping up considerably over the last years.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be Uranus. Completely, that'd be Uranus. In fact, your natal Uranus right now, believe it or not, is in a loose conjunction with Juno. So you've got that lit up right now as well. Which is pretty awesome.
In the 12th house, too.
In the 12th house as well. So you will be drawing in the energies of the feminine soulmate. It doesn't have to come through a woman, obviously. But it is they are going to be past life connections or deeply karmic connections, which will facilitate your awakening even more at this time. And Juno is going in retrograde now. So she is going to conjunct your Uranus and wake him up all over again. So that's going to be very, very interesting for you. And in fact, right now at this time, transiting Mars is going to conjunct your Chiron within maybe a day or two. And even that's going to push you a lot further in this direction. So it's very good that you asked that question, because I'm afraid it's not going to stop ramping up anytime soon. In fact, in some ways, it's really just getting going.
Yeah,
a late
absolutely.
Bloomer, so to speak, here.
Sorry?
Yeah.
I said a late bloomer, so to speak, here, because, you know, this is all coming kind of to a head, and even as his natal Chiron is transiting ever closer to Black Moon and eventually will conjunct his Vesta as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the coming years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I really hate to take you away from this one because, you know, this is so fascinating. But I have another caller on the line, and we have about 26 minutes left in the show. So if you
could
bring this up. Don't be sorry. This has been fascinating. This has been fascinating. So maybe you could just bring it to a close with Steve, and then we can move on to our next caller, Lisa.
Sure. I'm a total geek when it comes to this, and I just lose track
of
time because I just get really interested. I would say you know, perhaps you might want to get a reading with me at some point or something to explore more of that yod, because that's a very, very karmic yod, as it involves the north node and south node, and I think there's some work for you to do there as well. Intuitively, I get that. Looking at the other goddess asteroids, there is Pallas Athena in your chart. She is opposed Neptune, which is very interesting. And she's in, for you, she is in Aries as well, not so great, but still in Aries, still very much to do with asserting that sense of self, particularly as you go through anything to do with a more structured, organized sense of religion or even a higher study or academia. It's really you who are taking yourself forward as the guide. This is the feeling that I get from your chart. And finally, we look at Ceres, who is actually in an in-conjunct with natal Venus. And Ceres really talks about that sense of nurturing, which we discussed earlier on the show. And, you know, Ceres is in a very, I would say, natural, sort of the stereotypical position in a good way, as it is in Cancer. So it is that lovely flow of tender emotions, of delicate emotions, and it is within that very, very sheltered 12th house as well. And it implies that you would be someone who best receives and gives nurture in a very almost intimate sphere, in a way that is perhaps secluded or obscured from the vision of everyone, of anyone else. It's private, but it's very pure. It's very emotional. It's like going into the sea of an ocean of emotions and experience whenever you decide to give someone nurture. And that is, again, the way you best receive nurture. A complete dissolution in some ways, a complete immersion. With this energy in conjunct with your Venus, what it tells me is that it also makes it somewhat challenging for you to express who you are as in whole, as a body or a vessel of the divine feminine. It makes it a little bit complicated to express this energy because for you, your Venus is a 29 degree Sagittarius, which is an anorectic degree, which is very, very karmic, which is very, very transformational. So you're, you know, basically charging forward, wanting to head into Capricorn, and you would have just had this energy activated not too long ago. And it contrasts very much with the way you actually give and receive nurture. Now, Venus talks about your ability to desire and to draw to you what it is that you desire. It is also that aspect of your femininity that deals with issues like fertility. It deals with issues of relationships. It deals with that part of you who comes out in partnerships, that aspect of your own femininity that comes through there. So it is a little bit challenging with the Ceres connection. It's going to be a little bit tricky for you to balance this aspect of your nurturer side and that the more active qualities of you as a desiring being, wanting the kind of completion that the feminine seeks. So I think that's as much as I can tell you now. I hope this has been of use to you.
Absolutely, and I'll listen to the show in the archive to fully
wonderful
gather more information.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Most welcome.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
So you know, what I'm seeing here is that these are all very interesting, fascinating placements, whether you're male or female. And yes. So let's take a look at Lisa's chart. I think I sent you her birth information as well. And
I'm just drawing it up now.
Go ahead and do that. I just want to let my producer know in the background there that I'm having issues with the computer. I can't mute or unmute anybody. So if you could maybe bring Lisa in for me, because for whatever reason, I can't. As if I don't exist in my own radio show here today. Hi, Lisa, are you on?
Yeah, I am.
Yay, okay, so it's just not showing me that you're there, but I know you're there now.
I'm here.
Good. Well, how's your day been?
Hi. My day's been wonderful. I'm really excited about this.
I am. So we're giving Byra V a few seconds here to get your information up. And
okay.
Then we can take a look at the story of your chart through these divine goddesses. And have you ever had a full astrology reading before, Lisa?
No, I've had nothing. And Byra V and I are Facebook friends, so I'm very interested. I follow her work, and I'm pretty excited that she's there today, and she's going to be telling me a little bit about my chart.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Which Lisa are you? As there's quite a few Lisas. Oh, you can message me later on Facebook.
Yeah, I will. I'll message you afterwards.
Okay, that's fine. Would you mind doing me a favor, Janet? Would you also look at your chart as well? Because, like I said, mine's a manual, and I wasn't fiddling around with it. It will take a little bit longer. Do you have this chart drawn up as well?
Let me pull it up real quickly here. And you know what? My computer, for whatever reason, is frozen at the moment. Oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
She just got froze.
Thank you, computer.
Goodness gracious. I'm like, what the heck is all this about? oh, goodness. I have her in. Hold on. I can get her up here really quickly. So you carry on. Did you already have part of her chart?
I've got her at Ascendant 17 Libra.
Do you have her? Where do you have her Lilith?
I have her Lilith at 28 Sagittarius, third house.
That's the right one.
Okay, cool. So the ascendant with 17 Libra. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay, Lisa, let's begin. Yay! Okay, now I'm going to start. In your case, let me just see what I see first. Let me take out the points which are time specific. All right. Let's have a look. See. Okay. In your chart, the first thing that jumps out at me, and it really jumps out wild, is an inconjunct aspect between your Sun and natal Vesta conjunct Saturn. That is huge. So let's first start with an explanation of the Sun, because if you haven't had your chart done before, it might make more sense for you to go about it that way. From what I see in this chart, your Sun is in Libra, and it is situated within the 12th house. Now, a Libra and Sun, I mean, personally, I find Libra to be the most powerful energy of the zodiac. But like I told you, I'm weird. I see things in a different way. This is a good thing.
Not that weird.
And I see... oh, good. Now, listen, I find Libra to be a position of power, because what it actually calls you to do is to find harmony, balance, and equilibrium, yes. But it's not just in being happy with the things that it's easy to be happy about. It's not the energy which says, you know, just surround yourself with beauty and what's wonderful and what's charming, and that's called balance. It's not. That's called fantasy. Libra's energy actually, in its most transcendental state, asks you to be comfortable with the existence of all types of polarities, all types of opposites. It is really that energy that uniquely has the power to hold two different things, and one can be completely opposite to the other, and hold them in balance and say both are equal, both are valid, both are important. This is why Libra is also focused on the energies of judgment and detachment, because it doesn't take a side. So in that sense, it can be a powerfully impartial energy that gives everything and everyone the space to exist and have its own moment under the sun. And that's why I personally enjoy the energy of Libra. I'm a Capricorn, by the way, which is very different from what I am, but I love the energy of Libra because it is an energy that really teaches us to suspend our own judgment and to see that there are many, many truths within the universe and that they're all cool. But that is the most, you know, advanced is the wrong word, but that perhaps is the most spiritually realized form of Libra. In practice, Libra does go for things that it considers graceful and beautiful and artistic and wonderful. And, you know, even that, there is a wide spectrum and range of things. It is an energy that likes to keep things balanced. It's an energy that does not like confrontation by nature. You know, if you can avoid
confrontation at all. I'm bad at it.
So at the day-to-day level of reality, you know, unless you're really working towards what Libra can fully represent, at the day-to-day level of reality, it can even represent a sense of self that is somewhat subjugated to the wills of another. You know, it's that energy of not wanting to step on another person's toes, not wanting to rock the boat, not wanting to basically say, hey, I exist here. So it's that it can almost kind of fall into a false sense of balance and a false sense of harmony like keeping the peace, even if, or keeping appearances up, even if things are really, really bad or really, really wrong. So in day-to-day reality, Libra at the everyday level has a certain set of challenges. It's not the most, even though it's associated with judgment and detached decision-making, in practice I find that it is not the most decisive of signs unless you've spent a very, very long time working with it. So that really depends on the level of evolution of the soul. But there is a great potential with having a Libra sun. In the 12th house, it tells me that your sense of selfhood, represented by the sun, and just generally your focused awareness, so to speak, in this world, is somewhat obscure. It's hidden. It's in a layer and a place of reality that other people don't know how to access. They might assume that it's not even there because it's operating from a very, very secret part of you. It is the kind of energy that exists best in the spiritual realm. I'm not to say that you not to say that it shouldn't exist in the material realm or something like that, God forbid. It is the energy that basically says that that is the level of reality that you are more comfortable operating in. So it's not a very strong conscious awareness or strong conscious of you know, the fact that you exist, this is who you are, this is your energy. It's not so emphasized in the material level, but in the spiritual realms, in realms which lead to places that go back into your own karma or into your own past or just things that are unseeable by most people. Does that make sense to you?
It makes absolute sense, yes.
Oh, good, 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 good. Now, this energy is in conjunct your Vesta and natal Saturn, and that both of that is situated in your fifth house. Saturn is, interestingly, at 29 degrees Aquarius, and Vesta is at 3 degrees Pisces, both are in retrograde. Now, an in-conjunct aspect is an aspect which has a disquieting kind of aspect. I think of it as the sound that nails make on the chalkboard. It's not pleasant. When an in-conjunct is connected by a sextile and another in-conjunct, it becomes a yod. But left where it is, it's this constant type of frustration that you get when you try to combine two different elements that don't work very well together. And this is what's happening between your sun, your very essential sense of your vital purpose, your energy, and Vesta and Sagittarius. So there's a bit of a struggle going on there. And any time you have aspects at or near 3 degrees, if I'm not mistaken, it should be 3 degrees Leo, that's when you would have a yod. That's between 3 degrees Leo or 29 degrees Cancer to 3 degrees Leo. Anytime there are placements there, this will be triggered as a yod for you. So watch out for that. Now, basically, this energy of Vesta and Saturn conjunct one another is an energy that A, tells me of a very, very karmically ordained type of reality in this life. It is an energy that will literally throw the entire book of the trials of the three steps towards you. And that's not to punish you. Basically, as far as I'm concerned, we manifest the charts that we can handle. We manifest the charts that we need to learn from. This is not, in any sense, a form of punishment. It is, in fact, a platform for serious growth in becoming a spiritual facilitator, if you wish to be, in embodying that path of service in whatever way you wanted to embody it. There are trials, but these are the kinds of trials that you bounce back from and become an authority. And for you, both of these placements sit in the fifth house. So it really has to do with inner child dynamics, your relationship with your own children, your relationship with your creativity, your, to some extent, whatever comes out of your sacral chakra, whether it's a child, whether it's sexuality, whether it's just your own creative energy flowing through. It has a lot to do with the creative aspect of your own feminine energy. And so it is a very, very important challenge that you have taken up with this in-conjunct aspect and with Vesta conjunct Saturn. So Saturn is all about these karmic trials. It also, to me at the very least, in your chart, it comes through as a type of guide who is constantly present, very, very likely to be a crone or grandmotherly type of energy. Tell me if that resonates. And that is very, very close to this archetype of the priestess for you. Now, for you, the energy of Saturn is at 29 degrees Aquarius. That is basically at the very, very cusp, just before this energy breaks into Pisces. So really, there is this energy of revolutionary thinking, this energy of unconventional ideas, this burst of genius and creativity. And in fact, that's the only body you have in Aquarius. this is where your Saturn is saying, I'm going to limit the flow of connection and information just a little bit, but that is so you can become a master of it and take it to the rest of the zodiac. That's the type of powerful challenge that you, my friend, have manifested at this time. Vesta for you is in Pisces in the fifth house. It does represent a lot of sacrifices made in the earlier part of your life. Sometimes it refers to past lifetimes, but in your case, I feel that it's probably linked to this lifetime. Some aspect of letting go or giving up a certain aspect of innocence of childhood. Does it make sense to you?
Yes.
This is an energy that doesn't
Go ahead. Having children early, perhaps, and putting my children first.
Very possibly. And Vesta for you is in Pisces. That is an energy that calls for the truest nature of sacrifice, the type of sacrifice you make, not for ego, but really just because you have to do it. So, you know, it is an energy that both of these, with this powerful lessons of teaching and the lessons of sacrifice that you have made, are in conjunct your sun, meaning that these things are putting a lot of pressure for you to evolve to that state of total balance, which I talked about when I began introducing what the sun represents. You see what I mean? And your children are most definitely your greatest teachers, most definitely, without a doubt. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So that's the major goddess and asteroid connection that I see in the chart, just off the get-go. Other things that I see is that you have a powerful conjunction between Black Moon Lilith and Ceres. Your Black Moon Lilith is at 28 Sagittarius, so she would have been triggered and activated not too long ago. And that is pretty much opposed to your North Node. So you've got Black Moon Lilith, you've got Ceres, and you've got your South Node all sitting together. And let me just say that's pretty karmic. Very, very, very karmic.
On top of her galactic center, no less.
And exactly. Thank you for pointing that out. And so, you know, having this thing today is actually very, very auspicious for you because of so many things like family conjunct the galactic center. So really, you're kind of having this mini session, read, I don't know what to call it, right now because of that particular placement. See, Black Moon Lilith and Ceres are both the energies of what we call the dark or the rising suppressed feminine. And Ceres is, of course, the nurturer. I have a Ceres in Sagittarius as well, so I can empathize with it. It is an energy that teaches one to nurture others and the self by getting out there. It is an energy that can be deeply nurtured through astrology, particularly through the placement that it's at. I mean, smack bang on the galactic center with your South Node, especially. It is an energy that can really nurture someone and teach someone to go forward and be brave enough to explore their own ideas, to explore whatever they want to explore, whether it's through a guide, whether it's through an authority figure, to just keep going and learning and learning and learning and expanding one's sense of self that way. So, you know, it is a very fiery type of nurturing, and the kind of nurturing that sort of, you know, makes sure that whoever you choose to nurture gets out there and does things. And in fact, this is the way that you best receive nurture. So that's one aspect of it. Black Moon Lilith, she basically makes sure that you or whoever you choose to protect and nurture is not going to be stepped upon. No matter, even if it's someone as an authority, no matter if it's someone sitting on a pedestal with a giant crown on his or her head, if something is wrong, that energy is there to make sure that you challenge it. And the conjunction of Black Moon Lilith and Ceres basically tell me that you have a very, very unique opportunity to actually show how the dark aspect of the goddess is nurturing, is healing, is whole, is comforting. And so, and you know, conjunct the black hole, which is at the center of, you know, this particular galaxy, the Milky Way, it is that idea of the sacred, nurturing, healing darkness, which is fantastic. But
the dark and the light. I mean, the dark through light, or the light through the dark.
Yes, it's really not something that we can really afford to sacrifice either on. But what something that I also see with the South Node is that you probably have a previous lifetime, or perhaps even several previous lifetimes, as an astrologer or as a guide in certain way, because those are the energies that are reflected by Sagittarius in general. But you know, this is so powerful and this is so awesome, and this is sitting in your third house of early childhood, also your relationship with your siblings, the way you express your mind, your will, your voice, who, just simply being able to exist in an environment around you. And all of this is awesome, but this is something that you've done before, so you don't have the luxury of sitting with it. What you basically need to be doing is taking all of this powerful energy and pushing it straight into your North Node. And your North Node, my friend, is at 27 degrees Gemini sitting in your ninth house. So no matter what you feel about authority figures, whether it's, you know, religious authority or an academic authority, you are basically being called to exist in that space and become a teacher in your own right based on what you have learned. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm 50 right now, and I'm transitioning out of taking care of kids and husbands into finding my own path.
Absolutely.
Yep, that's your.
So that's what I wanted.
Well.
That's what I wanted insight on.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm very glad to hear that. I'm just looking at your transit very briefly. Oh, this is interesting. Very interesting. Very important time for you. You've got your natal Juno and Pallas. They're going to be lit up by transiting Saturn and Pallas. So another aspect of the goddess archetype. All of this is pretty much opposed your natal Jupiter that's in Taurus in your eighth house. So that's going to be really interesting for you in the way you develop a new sense of self-worth and the way you actually manage to hold your own ground in dealing and bringing your energies with another person's energies very, very briefly and just in a nutshell. So this is going to be a very interesting time for you as you relearn the self-worth concept. Kudos to you. You've got
that's what I'm trying to do.
Good. That's exactly what's happening. Neptune has just entered your second house, so he's going to be like throwing in the occasional spiritual wrench in the work, saying just chill out and relax and figure out everything. That's also
going to be
going on along
with the Neptune has just entered into her natal Vesta. And, of course, Saturn and Neptune are in square for the next several months as we move into 2015. So this should be a very interesting time for her to start moving toward her own specific destiny.
Absolutely. I mean, that Neptune-Vesta conjunction, transiting Neptune on natal Vesta, that is going to be expanding your mind in the best sense, best way possible. You're just going to have to let go of everything that you had that forced you to become a caretaker by choice. You know, it was still by choice at a certain level that made you become to sacrifice your own period of childhood. All of the conditioning that you had to make that decision is kind of being washed away right now. It's like a tsunami of energy right there.
And
you've also got a Chiron return coming up. That's in Pisces, same house, and that's going to really open up that very old wound in childhood, and that is going to allow you to become that teacher which I said you needed to become. In fact, right now at this moment, the transiting North Node has just conjuncted your ascendant. So really, you're being pulled into a new understanding of what balance is. So my friend, it's a very, very, very impressive time time for you right now. I mean, the
and how magical that,
you know,
that
you've
called in today
happening.
To hear all of this.
Yeah.
And,
those
you know,
kinds of things
I have
keep
enjoyed
happening.
Listening to this. Yeah, but we're looking at 2 minutes left in the show. And, Bhairavi, I really want you to be able to share your information with people. How can they find you? You know, your blog, your website, your email. What would you like to share with the listeners about how to get a hold of you?
Tons of ways that you can contact me. The easiest way is Facebook. Just look for me, Bhairavi Balasubramaniam. I know the name is long, but you can easily copy paste it from the description of this show. I also have my blog, www.bhairavibalasubramaniam.com. I couldn't think of anything fancy. That's why I have my name there. And I've got a bunch of Facebook pages, The Goddess, The Serpent, and The Sea, Building Pathways of Light, The Dark Mother's Children, I Am Rising, The Goddess Awakens, and a new page called Shiva, My Love. I'm kind of working in the divine masculine that way. So I've got a lot of ways you can contact me. I'm also on YouTube. Just search for my name, and you will get a hold of me in one way or another.
Awesome. Thank you so much today for being here and for sharing with us all this information and doing readings. I think I got as much today out of everything that you said as anybody else could possibly have.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining me today, and we hope to have
thank
you back
you
again.
Thank you for having me.
You're
yes,
very
please.
Welcome. And as we wind down here, I just want to take this moment at the end of the year, because for the next 2 weeks, of course, Living Astrology will be off the air. Next Thursday's Christmas, and then after that, New Year's. I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday. In whatever way you celebrate, may it bring you lots of joy and happiness and time together with family and friends. And I look forward to seeing you all or hearing you all next year as we enter 2015. Thank you all so
Woo!
Much for joining us, and have a stellar week.
Thank you for joining us today on Living Astrology. You can reach Janet for readings or astrological advice at www.living-astrology.com or by email at janet@living-astrology.com. Would you like to host your own weekly radio show? If so, contact us at empoweruradio@gmail.com. Or if you would like to be considered as a guest or would like to recommend a guest, email us at empoweruradio@gmail.com. Goodbye for now, and have a stellar week.